WGHN Reviews. This is Doug Chapkus with the news, the big news stories that made the headlines in 1965.
The Michigan Gas Utilities Company, 310 South Water Street in Grand Haven, presents WGHN Reviews, a one-hour presentation featuring the major news stories of the year. The WGHN News Department glances back and recalls the big happenings with capsule summaries, voice reports, and the actual recordings of personalities and events in the news. There was one news story that seemed of special significance to us, newly stationed here in town, a story of extra import, of added interest. It meant a lot to us, and we hope it meant a lot to you, too.
Yes, on February 3rd, 1964, radio station WGHN took on a new sound in Grand Haven. The station was labeled the all-new WGHN as Doug Chapkus and George Kleist took over the operation. Their efforts in the first days of broadcasting were aided by only two other staff members, highly competent in their field, Dan Bethel of Wyoming and Mrs. Catherine Cray of Grand Haven. Skeptics waited and listened, the community liked the sound, accepted the new radio station, and made friends quickly.
The annual Coast Guard Festival made the news.
It was only April when Coast Guard Festival Chairman Chuck Bogalski called WGHN from the Pentagon and let us talk with his friend. This was the news story that followed.
The United States Air Force Thunderbirds will again participate in the 174th Coast Guard Anniversary Festival Air Show at Grand Haven on August 1st. The announcement was made today by the U.S. Department of Defense over radio station WGHN in a direct telephone broadcast. Major Frank Russo said the Thunderbird show is better than last year. And here's what he told WGHN.
We're real fortunate in that I saw the Thunderbird's first demonstration at Norfolk. Norfolk, Virginia held the International Azalea Festival yesterday, and the team really looked tremendous. You know, they're in the new F-105.
Oh, is that right?
Yes, and they're all pleased as a group as well as individually as pilots because it's a bigger aircraft and has a lot more power. And surprisingly enough, the show is still contained in the same airspace. In other words, they don't have to range further out. You would assume normally that with a bigger airplane that their turns would be wider and they'd leave the perimeter field, etc., but they don't. They really pull the show in real good and tight. It's a real fast-moving show. They've added a couple of maneuvers since you all last saw them.
Right.
And I know that the team itself and the aircraft that they're flying are going to be a completely new experience for the people of Grand Haven.
Well, this new plane that they're using, Major, sounds like they must put on even a much more exciting performance than they have before.
Well, it is. It's a faster airplane. They bottom out a little bit higher speeds, and yet they have a great degree of control at slow speeds. So they're able to give the spectators a view of not only high-speed maneuvers, but slow-speed maneuvers as well. And this is something that they attempted to do in the 100 and did do, but not quite as successfully as they can in the 105.
Will the Thunderbirds be coming to the Tri-Cities, Major, for this year's Coast Guard Festival Air Show?
They sure will.
Well, we're real happy to hear that.
Well, we're very pleased. We've kind of got a fond spot in our hearts for the festival there. I personally attended myself, along with General Folloy, as Chuck had told you, and the General still remarks, oddly enough, the thing that impressed him the most was the fountain.
Well, I think the fountain's impressing a lot of people.
I'm sure it is.
News of the return of the Thunderbirds for the fourth time pleased civic and festival officials. The air show promises to be a great attraction this year with many other features that will run the show for 3 solid hours.
As the festival drew closer, Bogalski revealed he had other new attractions for the 64 event. Appearances by the American Legion Zouaves Drill Team and the Royal Canadian Mounted Police Band. Then he scored again with international publicity in the United Airlines Mainliner magazine. United Airlines Captain L. W. Whitlow presented the publication to Mayor William Creason at the Muskegon Airport.
Captain Whitlow of United Airlines would like to present the Mainliner to Mayor Creason.
Thank you, Captain. On behalf of the City of Grand Haven, we wish to thank you very much for bringing these in today. We certainly hope that the 3,000 or 4,000 of them that we distribute will not only benefit the Coast Guard Festival that's featured in your fine magazine, but as people travel around the country and pick up their issue of the August Mainliner, they'll have a chance to read a little bit of something about our Coast Guard Festival in Grand Haven. Certainly, I want to extend an invitation to you at any time you're down this way to stop in and see us also. Thank you very kindly.
Well, thank you very kindly, Mayor.
During the actual festival, one of the big highlights took place right at the foot of Washington Street when our huge musical fountain was rededicated by 3 celebrities, introduced by Claude Verdine.
Commander Anthony Fugaro, front and center, Commander. Admiral Paul E. Trimble from Washington, D.C., Admiral Trimble. And Mrs. Joseph Fox, now of Wilmington, formerly of the Grand Haven area.
Fountain of Light, we dedicate you to the men of the United States Coast Guard who, since the inception of the service in 1790, have given their lives that others may live. May you stand as a constant reminder that greater love hath no man than to lay down his life for another. As you honor the memory of those departed with your ever-changing lights, may you challenge us anew to so live as true Americans that the sacrifices of those who have died will not have been in vain. May your light be a symbol of peace, freedom, and security for which they gave their lives.
Fountain of strength, whose power is heard in the thunder of your rushing waters, we dedicate you to the officers and men of the United States Coast Guard, who today, as always, stand ready to protect our shores from foreign aggression. To the men who in their peacetime duties administer to those in distress in storms and flood. May the Coast Guard service that God has blessed ever remain strong and vigilant, that the people of this great nation may have confidence in its ability to meet all emergencies.
Fountain of beauty, portrayed through sight and sound, we dedicate you to the task of standing as the lone sentinel over our harbor and our city, as a symbol of hope for the future, and there to remain a living testimonial of the community's affection for the officers and men of the Coast Guard, proclaiming to all that Grand Haven is truly Coast Guard USA.
There were other dedications in 1964.
And another big one took place at the same site, only in December.
Nearly 20,000 persons have extended a warm welcome to Michigan's chief executive on his first official visit at a civic event in Grand Haven. Governor George Romney was flown here by private plane late yesterday to dedicate the mammoth nativity scene on Dewey Hill. The Christmas scene is 3 blocks long and covers the east side of the big sand dune across Sand River from our main business district. The governor was 30 minutes late in arriving at Grand Haven Memorial Air Park due to a holdup in Lansing. But the throng, many of them schoolchildren, waited in the 20-degree weather for the arrival of the governor and the caravan. A parade, led by a color guard from Grand Haven, started at 7th Street, and about 5,000 persons lined the main street, Washington Street. Members of the high school bands from Grand Haven and Spring Lake took part, as well as many other groups. Most of the crowd, however, was at the waterfront, where an estimated 10,000 to 15,000 persons jammed the bleachers and surrounding area. This was the main theme of Governor Romney's brief address.
This is a great religious period. And certainly it's appropriate that here in Grand Haven you should have taken the facilities you now have in connection with your musical fountain to also develop this holiday display. And I think it's very timely. I happen to personally feel that the thing we need to be concerned about most is the decline in religious conviction and moral character and patriotism. And patriotism in this country, if it's properly understood, is based on our belief in a creator and our inalienable rights as individuals and on the importance of each individual.
Following Mr. Romney's brief talk, a special presentation was made. Mayor Creason called on Mrs. E.K. Ellis, who had designed the nativity scene characters, to make the presentation. She had painted a large picture of the nativity scene, especially for the governor. This is how she made the presentation and Mr. Romney's reaction.
Don't you think it would be nice if the governor had a present for Christmas from us?
Yeah! You're very gracious. Oh! Isn't that beautiful? Thank you. That's beautiful.
As you can see, that's a painting of the nativity scene on the hill that she designed and created. And, you know, this whole thing is a very interesting development. I understand your mayor got the idea of that musical fountain when he was over in the armed services in Germany, and he saw a small fountain over there and got the idea that might be an idea for this hill, you see. And one thing adds to another, and I want to express admiration for what he's done and what Mrs. Ellis has done, and I certainly thank all of you for this wonderful Christmas present. Thank you very much.
Finally, the climax of the short program at the waterfront. Governor Romney formally dedicated the nativity scene on Dewey Hill and threw the switch that began illuminating the 70 characters and figures. As the lighting sequence began, a 100-voice mass community choir sang Christmas carols.
As governor of the state of Michigan, I am very honored to dedicate this nativity, this Grand Haven nativity scene.
Shortly after the program, the busy governor was on his way again. He told local officials before he left that he was amazed at the beauty of the display.
And now the obituary notices of 1964.
Area residents mourn the passing of many well-known personalities over the year. Former sugar beet growing champion and part owner of Screw Machine Specialty Company, Fred Kieft. President of Burnside Manufacturing Company, Herbert Burnside. Superintendent of Grand Haven Parks, Peter Spolma. Former fishing tug captain, Caleb Verdine. Chairman of the Johnston Boiler Works of Ferrisburg, John Johnston Sr. One of the two survivors of the 1943 Escanaba sinking, Melvin Baldwin. Former Grand Haven Mayor, Cheryl Nelson. Junior high math teacher, Mrs. Mary Schultz. And former Ottawa County Sheriff Hans Dykhaus, sheriff from 1912 to 1916.
Resignations in 1964.
Ottawa County Youth Home House parents, Mr. and Mrs. Marvin Swartz, Associate Grand Haven Municipal Judge Edward Kirby, then his successor, Harry Leifers, Jr. Fruitport Village Clerk Stanley Frisbee, County GOP Chairman Edmund Ellis, Spring Lakes Jeffers School Principal Richard Howe, and Grand Haven High Director of Adult and Vocational Education, James Jacobs.
Show me the way to go home. I'm tired and I want to go to bed.
Some retired in 1964.
Here's how we reported one of the major retirements of the year.
More than 100 persons turned out Saturday night to say goodbye to Spring Lake Police Chief Richard Lovingston. The event was an appreciation dinner sponsored by a citizens' committee for Chief and Mrs. Lovingston. The chief will be retiring as of the end of this year for health reasons. Starting off the parade of speakers who gave words of thanks and farewell was the pastor of the church where the dinner was held, Reverend Roy Marshall of the Spring Lake Presbyterian Church.
He's been the kind of police officer that has always been available. He's always been where you could see him. He's been around night and day. I've lived around here around 15 years, and some of my calls have taken me out at all hours of the night, and I have met Dick in all hours of the night.
Village President Dr. R.J. Camper had these words to say.
I think Spring Lake community can be well proud of Dick Livingston, our police chief, for the good he's done to the young and to the old, for the job he's done, which he has done very successfully and very well. And this is not a time for words, I don't think. It is time of deep emotional feeling, which can only be expressed in the words, thank you. God bless you, Dick.
Spring Lake Superintendent of Schools, Richard Fonger, spoke on behalf of the schools and the children.
I speak, I think, tonight for all the children in our school system, our faculty, and our Board of Education, and thanking you for all the things you've done for us. So, Dick, wherever you go, Godspeed, and return to us as soon as you can. Thanks a lot.
Ottawa County Sheriff Bernard Grison spoke on behalf of police officers.
His fellow officers not only respect the chief of Spring Lake, but they also are willing to work with him at any time that he would request it. Some of the things that I know that could be seen as far as from the people from the outside, there's no question that with anyone, as far as the residents of Spring Lake is concerned, that Chief Livingston has done his job, and he has done his job well. However, I'd like to bring forth just for a moment the fact that also there's another side to a law enforcement officer that many of you never see, and perhaps the only ones that do see it are his fellow law enforcement officers. It may be a situation of where a young boy is getting himself into difficulty, and here's the chief sits here, and what is he going to do with it? Maybe the young boy has never had a chance, and how is he going to handle it? And being a fellow law enforcement officer in the county with Chief Livingston, I can assure you that even on the side of law enforcement, what the general public does not see, that Chief Livingston has done his job well and has gained the respect not only of his community, but he's gained the respect of his fellow law enforcement officers as well.
Grison also presented the chief with the first new 1965 through 1968 Sheriff's Deputy badge and card. Chairman of the Citizens Committee, Joe Wachter, presented Chief and Mrs. Livingston with personal gifts and then a cash gift of $1,500 raised in a community fund drive. In conclusion, Chief Livingston made brief remarks.
On behalf of my wife and myself and the community here, what they have done for me is wonderful. I want to thank all of you, and I want to thank the radio station, everybody that connected with the program, and I want to thank the people that made the meal for us, and I want to thank them for a good meal they made for us and make comfortable for us to be on our way at the 1st of January. Thank you, all of you.
WGHN's Dan Bethel was master of ceremonies for the program.
Others who retired in 64, Grand Haven High School history teacher for 42 years, Mrs. Helen Bell. Junior high teacher for 18 years, Esther D. Nyland. High school principal for 38 years, Glenn Olson. And Christian school kindergarten teacher for 40 years, Angie Van Covering.
Many received appointments in 1964.
In Spring Lake, Ted Reisinger, Jeffers School Principal, Harry Carlson, Junior High Principal, Paul Boyink, Senior High Principal, Leon Langland, Chief of Police. In Grand Haven, Dale Lutman, Principal of Central and Elliott Schools, Walter Bright, High School Principal, Tom Joyner, City Engineer, Herman Van Opinen, Superintendent of Mails. And in Ottawa County, Reverend and Mr. Lester Prokrafka, House Parents for the Youth Home, Harvey Skolton, President of the Bar Association, and Joyce Hatton, first woman in history as president of the County Republican Committee.
Others received awards.
Mayor Cresson, the Liberty Bellewarn from Ottawa Young Lawyers. The City of Grand Haven, a citation for preparation of the annual financial report from the Municipal Finance Officers Association. Extension agent Bob Van Klompenberg for outstanding service. Grand Haven mail carriers for safety. And Mrs. Isabel Bills of Spring Lake, Career Woman of the Year.
Crime marched on in 1964.
Murder came in the form of a September stabbing in Grand Rapids over a racial issue. Killed was former Spring Lake man Keith Wilderdink. His alleged assailant, a Saginaw fruit picker, was arrested later. The big Grand Haven crime was a safe cracking at Plum Supermarket on the night of August 12th. $2,000 in cash taken, $800 in canceled checks. Police in the general area were kept busy with safe crackings and burglaries of doctors' offices and churches. Being held in connection with church burglaries in the Holland area are William Maxson and Joseph Sansoni, both of Chicago. Sheriff's men made strategic arrests in April, 6 days apart, as burglars attempted to work in Ellendale. Grand Haven police solved the theft of 16 cars with the arrest of a 17-year-old. 13 burglaries in 6 cities were solved by Holland police with the arrests of John Sebasta and Charles Pate. Halloween night fires, mainly in abandoned houses in Ottawa County, were solved when sheriff's men arrested 10 teenagers.
Fires, tragedy, accidents took their usual leading role in the news of the year.
Fire destroyed the George Christman home in Spring Lake Township to the tune of $50,000. On July 10th, flames destroyed the Seaver Industrial Finishing Company, 830 Woodlawn, Grand Haven, at a loss of $125,000.
The Seaver Industrial Finishing Company, located on Beacon Boulevard at Woodlawn Street, has been destroyed by fire this afternoon. Firemen in 6 units from Grand Haven Township, Spring Lake, and Ferrisburg fire departments are still battling the blaze in the single-story brick building. Firemen received their first call shortly before 6 p.m. this evening when a passing motorist spotted the flames. Witnesses said the fire seemed to have started in the rear of the building, the section where the painting is done. A series of explosions followed and fire quickly spread throughout the building. No one was in the factory at the time of the fire. Firemen were hampered in their efforts when they could not get enough water. Meanwhile, the blazing fire burned on, while some firemen had to stand by helplessly. But finally, the problem was solved, but the building could not be saved. Helping hands transferred all the office furniture and all the records they could reach into a waiting truck before the fire reached the office section. Flames from the burning building shot hundreds of feet into the air, while thick, black, billowy smoke could be seen for miles around. Traffic on Beacon Boulevard had to be stopped and rerouted because of the location of the fire. Hundreds of people, including former Grand Haven Chief Henry Hobeck, watched the fire. Hobeck assisted firemen throughout the firefighting. Seaver Industrial Finishing Company is owned by Jane Seaver and his 2 sons, David and Ronald, of Grand Haven. As of now, they have been unavailable for comment. This is Dave DeHare reporting for WGHN from the scene.
$75,000 damage was done by fire to the Muskegon Christian School, and flames leveled an old landmark in Nunica, the Nunica Tavern. 71-year-old James Bosma died in April when his clothes caught fire as he attempted to light a heating stove in his Grand Haven apartment. Despite a heroic effort by his mother, 5-year-old Dirk Ryther of Grand Haven lost his life in an August fire that destroyed his home. Injured by fire were Robert Landman of Grand Haven in a butane explosion at a construction site near Bangor and a 6-year-old Polly Stilson of Ferrisburg when her clothes caught fire from a kitchen range. Killed in miscellaneous accidents, Vernon Coates of Robinson and Eugene Dreyer of Talmadge when cars fell while they were working underneath. Grand Haven junkyard owner Jerry Weavers when knocked off a crane by a loose cable. Richard Bills of Spring Lake when he fell from a 3rd-story balcony at Michigan Tech University in Houghton. And a 58-year-old man and a 12-year-old boy when a cable used by a bulldozer to pull down a tree slipped on the winch at Jennison. 2 plane crashes made headlines. In late April, 2 Holland executives lost their lives when their craft plunged into Lake Michigan north of Grand Haven. And just a week ago, Charles Perrow Jr. of Muskegon was seriously injured when his plane nosedived to the ground at Grand Haven Memorial Air Park from an altitude of 50 to 70 feet.
School News of 1964.
Grand Haven received top rating on $3.4 million in bonds for school construction, saving the schools thousands of dollars, according to elated Superintendent Ralph Van Valkenburg. It was decided to replace Grand Haven High football bleachers, and the Laudit Foundation gave the local schools a $75,000 grant to build up library materials. A big moment in Grand Haven came on October 7th.
Grand Haven's new Central Elementary School was dedicated in special ceremonies last night. Some 200 persons were on hand for the program, officially dedicating the new seven-classroom school, which was built at a cost of nearly $300,000. It replaces the old three-story Central School, which burned down in January of 1963. Boy Scouts presented the flag, fifth-grade students provided vocal music, the Reverend Darrell Black of the First Presbyterian Church offered the invocation, and opening remarks were made by Superintendent of Grand Haven Schools, Ralph Van Valkenburg.
What was there about this old school? It was a mass of brick and stone and wood. It was antiquated. It was inefficient. It was difficult and expensive to maintain. And it was actually dangerous. And what is there about an old bell, which is just a mass of metal, that would cause a tear to come to the eye of those who watched it fall? I would like to think that this was not just nostalgia, but that this bell and this building, like the famous Liberty Bell, was a symbol of the thing that the youngsters were just singing about here a moment ago. This is a part of our great heritage in America, our educational heritage.
Central School students then presented an impressive program of historical sketches telling the history of the 60-year-old Central School building, which had served students in all grades during its lifetime from kindergarten to high school. The new building was officially presented by Michael J. Kotelis, representing the designers of the building, to Judge Jacob Ponstein, president of the Grand Haven Board of Education.
Judge Ponstein, it gives me great pleasure to present you the keys of Central School. Thank you, Mr. Catullus. I'm sure that each and every one of you feel the same as I do, that this is a moment of awe and at the same time a moment of excitement. As I look back to the day when the Central School burned, and since that time, I'm sure that you will agree with me that we have all, no doubt, prayed the same prayer, and that is that we thank the good Lord that there were no casualties at the time when the school did burn, and secondly, that he saw fit that mothers and fathers and citizens of the school district built a new school on the same location. And it gives me a great pleasure at this time to accept the Central School on behalf of the Board of Education, the administration, the faculty, the mothers and fathers, the taxpayers of the school district, and last but not least, our wonderful boys and girls. Thank you very much.
The main address consisted of a series of memories of the old Central School presented by former school board member Miller Sherwood, who attended Central School and whose four children also attended the school. After the program, open house was held. And today, classes resume in the new building. Some 250 students enjoy the new facilities, the new colors, the newest types of lighting, the newest and most advanced design. But they'll still be called to classes by the bell of the old Central School, ringing loudly and clearly, shining brightly in its new special tower, but still the same bell that called many of their parents and grandparents to school.
Other construction activity of 1964.
A six-room addition to the Spring Lake Junior Senior High School. The start of construction on a $2 million Grand Haven Junior High. Plans were made for a $36,000 planetarium for the junior high to be built with matching funds. A new district library at Fruitport dedicated. $64,500 in outdoor athletic facilities for Fruitport High. A new Ottawa County building to cost $700,000 was started in Grand Haven. Construction started on a new $1 million bridge on M-104. The Road Commission decided to build a new $45,000 building in Hudsonville. And Consumers Power announced a $45 million addition to its Port Sheldon plant and built a new Grand Haven Township substation at a cost of $90,000.
...1964 elections and politics.
In Spring Lake, voters approved a $200,000 water bond issue. In Grand Haven, voters edged Miller Sherwood out of the school board and ushered in Dr. Frank Grote. In the September 1st primary, Ottawa Sheriff Bernard Grison easily beat his opponent for the second time, Laverne Bouvier.
Well, Bud, with almost all returns in now, with the exception of just a few precincts, and it's quite obvious that you've won by a good 2-to-1 margin, how do you feel?
Well, Doug, actually, I couldn't say anything else but that I feel real good about it. However, I feel that the people of the county have given a real vote of confidence, not only to myself, but also to the men of the department. I feel definitely that the men of the department have done their job, and they've done this job well. I believe that we have some of the finest police officers that we'll find any place in the state. It's a real vote of confidence for all the men on this department.
In the hot race of the area, Melvin DeStichter of Hudsonville beat out his four opponents for GOP nomination for state representative and said this election night.
All I can say is that I would be extremely grateful to all the people that were. Then, of course, I would, even though I made it, I won, I would certainly be a representative of all the people that voted for the other candidates as well.
Newcomer Hal Volcom of Holland unseated Republican Fred Hilbert for senator of the 23rd District. Grand Haven's Ed Meany, Jr. lost out in his bid for GOP nomination as U.S. senatorial candidate to Mrs. Ellie Peterson. In the LBJ landslide of the November election, local spokesmen naturally hit at their strongest points. Democrat Jim Bottier said this.
It shows that the majority of the American people have confidence in the present administration and the Kennedy-Johnson programs. Also, it is a repudiation of the Goldwater type of republicanism and conservatism. And most importantly, it, in the long run, it was a repudiation of the far-right extremist groups that tried to influence this election with their poisoned, penned hate literature.
Republican Chairman Ed Ellis was happier about Governor Romney's strong showing despite the landslide.
I am now, and as always, in favor of the will of the people. I don't care whether the will of the people is expressed as Democrat or Republican majorities, and I don't care whether it's nationally, statewide, or countywide. I believe in the will of the people, and I think the will of the people have expressed their preference for Lyndon B. Johnson for president, and I also believe that they've expressed their preference for our great esteemed governor for Michigan.
In local elections for the year ahead, Mayor Creason says he'll run again. Councilman Fullerton and Purcell will meet opposition from John Walhout and Charles Resney.
These weren't the only kind of strikes in the community.
150 workers walked out of Anderson Bowling in Spring Lake over contract problems on July 10th at noon, but were back on the job July 13th. Settlement hasn't been as quick at Gardner Denver of Grand Haven, where some 380 hourly paid workers have been out of work since November 3rd because of a strike that began over a union shop issue. The next meeting between company and Local 1503 of the IAM will be held January 6th. To this date, neither side has budged.
There's water.
Water was a major problem for some area communities in 1964.
Spring Lake voters okayed a bond issue to beef up the village water system. A study committee recommended that Ferrisburg buy water from Grand Haven, the plans of which are now being worked on. The village of Fruitport is attempting to join the Muskegon Area Water and Sewer Authority to solve water supply problems for that area.
What else happened in Grand Haven in 1964?
While plans for a new post office at Washington and Forth were okayed, the Planning Commission adopted a master plan for orderly area development. The Board of Land and Power benefited from several antitrust suits, netting a total of some $211,000. The 50 millionth visitor was honored at the Grand Haven State Park last summer, greeted at the gate by park manager Howard Gilmore.
Congratulations, Mr. Thorndale, on being the 50 millionth visitor to Grand Haven State Park. We hope that your visit will be most pleasant. In order to help you celebrate this occasion, we have arranged for the following. A luncheon as guests of Mr. John Bowery of the Bilmar Beach Inn. A luncheon as guest of Mr. Arthur Manguel, manager of Windschulers Incorporated here in Grand Haven. A ride on the Sternwheel River Queen as guest of Captain Lee Size. A dune car ride as a guest of Mr. John Klomp. Also, complimentary tickets to the Water Thrill Show if it will be possible for you to return on one of their regular performances. We would also like to escort you and your party to a showing of the musical fountain here in Grand Haven and provide some evening snacks. Congratulations on being our 50 millionth visitor.
Mr. Thorndale, have you anything to say now?
Yes, I am very pleased. We are the 50 millionth visitor at Grand Haven State Park. This is one of the favorite parks for our family. For years we've been coming down here, and it was a real surprise to have this honor.
What was the reason you came to the state park today?
Well, it was a debate whether we go to Gun Lake today, to Yankee Springs State Park, or else to Grand Haven, and we finally decided to come to Grand Haven and do some fishing and picnicking both.
When do you plan to return to indulge in these activities?
Well, as soon as my wife gets out of the hospital and is able to come back with us, we hope to enjoy these various treats that are mentioned in the letter. We really will have quite a time, I'm sure.
Do you come to the Grand Haven State Park often?
Yes, we come quite often. In the summertime, we're here every couple of weeks, I'd say. It varies. A real hot night, we may drive down for the night also.
Very fine. We thank you very much, Mr. Thorndale, and again, our congratulations.
Thank you.
The Grand Haven City Council discussed changing the names of some 14 streets, which now have two or more names each. The study was started on February 17th. The name changes were approved March 2nd, were rescinded March 16th, were proposed again March 30th, and the idea was dropped following a heated public hearing on April 13th. A member of the Grand Haven Water Thrill Show team, Dave Rude, set a world record by flying across Lake Michigan on a huge kite. His manager, Felix Patlinski, telephoned WGHN from Milwaukee when they arrived.
Well, Felix, good to hear from you on the other side of the lake. Did you have any success this time?
We sure did. This time we finally made her, by golly.
Well, what time did you arrive on the other side of the lake, Felix?
We pulled into the main harbor entrance here in Milwaukee, right? The center harbor entrance at 13 minutes to 8.
That was a little bit longer than you'd expected, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, see, we were flying. This time we were flying against the wind. You know, the wind was southwest all the time. So, of course, when you fly against the wind, you have to slow down a little to, you can only use so much airspeed.
Sure.
We actually came in toward shore. We were about 8 miles south of Milwaukee. Of course, this wasn't too bad for all the wind we had because we didn't know what our drift would be. And then we came up along the shoreline flying the kite, of course, until we came into the main clipper entrance. Flew it right in between the piers like we wanted to.
Well, did the wind give any problem, Felix?
Oh, yeah. Now, over here, it's real calm, for about the last 2 miles.
Sure.
But, after about half hour out from Grand Haven until within 2 miles of this side, it was real rough. I mean, we knocked the compass off the deck, which we had to hold by hand the rest of the way. We pulled one of the ski tow bars off the side of the boat. It was banging up down all the way over.
But everybody made it in good shape.
Well, yeah, right. Dave actually did it perfectly. He's in better shape than the rest of us, I guess.
How does he feel?
Good. Yeah, he's all right, especially after, he got banged on the head in the ski show last night. He caught a ski on one of the acts. He got hit in the head with a ski, and they put in 7 stitches in his head.
goodness
and,
sakes.
Of course, then we left early this morning. We left at, was it 17 minutes after 4? We left Grand Haven there.
And no trouble getting started this morning?
No, no. After we made up our mind that it was good enough to try, away we went.
Well, real good.
Right.
Well, we certainly congratulate you, Felix, and I'd like to have you pass along our congratulations to Dave for setting this new world record.
Sure will. He's out there getting the kite up on the shore now.
Real good. Well, thank you very much, Felix.
Right on.
Okay, we'll see you later.
Bye.
Bye.
Some policemen received promotions. Others were promoted right out of town.
Grand Haven Police Sergeant Aubrey Goldman was promoted to Lieutenant, Patrolman Jack Billups to Sergeant. Ottawa County Deputy Robert Dykstra was promoted to Communications Sergeant. State Police Trooper Cornelius Biker of Grand Haven was promoted to a police aide of Governor Romney. Detective William Chandler of the local post was promoted to Detective Sergeant and went on to Bay City. And in November, Post Commander Sergeant Edward Lennon received news that he had been promoted to Staff Sergeant and transferred. A dinner was held in his honor.
Some 150 persons turned out last night to say farewell to Sergeant Edward Lennon of Grand Haven. Lennon, who has been commander of the Grand Haven State Police Post since 1961, has been promoted to Staff Sergeant and transferred to Ypsilanti, where he'll take charge of that post. The transfer and promotion become effective Sunday. Corporal Roy Collins of the Grand Haven Post headed up a committee that staged last night's farewell dinner for the sergeant. It was held at the Sherfine Auditorium in Muskegon. On hand were many of the sergeant's friends, newsmen, other police officers, judges, constables, troopers, and many others. Grand Haven's Mayor Pro Tem, Virgil Quebeman, gave the city's farewell and best wishes to Sergeant Lennon.
Mayor Cresson is unable to be with us tonight because of a prior commitment. So it becomes my privilege to bring you greetings from the city of Grand Haven. He also asked me, on behalf of the city of Grand Haven, to express our best wishes and congratulations to Sergeant Lennon on his new assignment. You know, in Grand Haven, we've always considered that the post, the men, and their officers are a part of our family, and we've enjoyed a warm and close association over the years. We sincerely hope and desire that we can continue this in the future. It is a real pleasure for us to join tonight in this tribute to the sergeant, and we would like to wish him Godspeed and good hunting.
Ottawa County Prosecutor James Bussard was master of ceremonies, and the main address was delivered by Claude Verdine, chairman of the Tri-Cities Chamber of Commerce. Verdine delivered a humorous chain of fictional incidents supposedly involving the sergeant, but finally concluded on a serious note.
So we're going to miss him, but we're not going to think about that. We're just going to think about the number of years that it has been our pleasure to know and to work with Sarge Lennon. Now, we congratulate you, Sarge, on your advancement, your promotion. We wish you Godspeed in this new assignment. And we hope that you will think of us back in this area occasionally and that you will be able to come back and see us. It's been a pleasure to know you and to work with you, and I think I speak for everyone here tonight. Thank you.
Sergeant Lennon received a standing ovation. Among those first to quickly rise were his troopers and officers from the Grand Haven Post. Tears welled up in the eyes of the veteran sergeant as the crowd wished him the best in its long and loud applause. At the conclusion of the program, following presentation of a gift by Corporal Collins, the departing sergeant made some closing remarks. This is how he ended.
But I will say that the Grand Haven area is the finest of the 8 areas that I've ever worked in. And our working area includes Muskegon and Ottawa County. And while here, I've made many fine acquaintances and friends, And I hope that I've been able to do something for these people. Now I'm passing on to Ypsilanti, and certainly I go with many regrets. And when I get there, I say, well, I believe I'm going to rest up for a while, but I don't think I will. I'll probably dive into the situation when I get there and see if I can find anybody that needs good police service, and that's what I'll give them. As I say, I'm very overwhelmed with your attendance here tonight, and I thank all of you very much for your attendance, and as was said here, maybe you're here to see me go, but it's certainly certainly my privilege to have you here tonight. It'll be my privilege to see any or all of you in the future, and I thank you very much.
The new Grand Haven Post commander was a special guest at the head table last night. He is Corporal Arthur Baker, Jr. from Ypsilanti, who will be Sergeant Baker when he takes over Sunday.
Speaking of transfers, one of the finest state park managers in Michigan got the nod for a promotion after he'd been in charge of our Grand Haven Park for only one season. Howard Gilmore leaves soon to take charge of the Island Lake Recreation Area near Brighton. His successor, Henry Zerberg, who comes from the Wilson State Park. And now here is the head of announcing, production, and continuity at WGHN, Dan Bethel.
Thank you, Tom. Good day, friends. You know, all fields of endeavor have inherent, built-in, occupational hazards. And employment in the field of radio is surely no exception. By nature, radio station personnel, at least on the announcer level, are nomadic, mercurial, transient. There's an air of impermanence to our trade, and most practitioners stand, valises packed, like smiling strangers in your midst, poised for almost instant flight. As proof, I submit my own radio career as testimony. 17 years in radio, 17 different stations worked at, and four of them on two separate return engagements. Now, you say, why this lack of stability? How come this here today, gone tomorrow aspect? Well, simply because as creative, perhaps egocentric, flamboyant, highly volatile workers in the spin yards, we are, by nature, restless, quick to anger, sometimes downright difficult people to be with. And we all suspect that just beyond the next hill, just around the next corner, is a radio station staffed by intelligent people, with a music policy compatible with our own tastes, offering a pay scale to match our needs, and blessed with an alert and attentive audience. Now, my experience has been that such station situations are quite rare, and my restless search for such an outlet had heretofore proven quite fruitless. Of course, one always approached a new assignment with high hopes, which sometimes wouldn't be dashed for a month, even 6 weeks. But dashed they always were until until last February. You know, when I first held preliminary talks with the management of the proposed new WGHN, I was impressed. They talked like radio people, they walked like radio people, and thank heaven, as it turned out, they performed like radio people. Now, the minute their plans were outlined, the music policy stated, the pay and salary requirements met, I got the feeling that this weary old wanderer had finally come home. Once we were on the air and you had a chance to get to meet us and we meet you, and once you began expressing your interest and appreciation, I knew for sure that this was my kind of station, playing my kind of music, for my kind of audience. Truly, it did seem like, well, coming in out of the cold, damp dark. Now, I cannot say with any certainty how long radio station WGHN will be a spiritual home for me. Evidently, there remains much of the wanderlust left in me, and other places and other faces continue to exert their pull on me. But I do say this. The offer sure would have to be a great one, and the opportunity a rare one indeed, to lure me and tempt me out of town. The sense of accomplishment, the feeling of fulfillment that I experience here at WGHN is compounded of equal parts of respect for a most understanding management and heartfelt appreciation for you, our listeners. You know, it's quite a recipe for personal happiness. And frankly, I'm enjoying my stay among you. And I trust 1965 will continue to see us caring and sharing one toward another. And now here is WGHN sales manager and chief engineer, the very nice George Kleiss.
First, speaking from a strictly engineering standpoint, WGHN sounds better than it has for a long time. The reasons for this are many, and were expensive. When community broadcasters assumed control of WGHN, we felt we had to have the best possible sound. Second best was not enough. This meant a gradual but almost complete revision and rehabilitation of electronic equipment. For example, we immediately purchased a new console. That's the control board in front of the announcer with knobs and dials for controlling the record turntables, the tape recorders, the microphones, and so on. Then, in order to assure better reproduction of tape recordings, we purchased two new Ampex tape recorders. These highly delicate machines were made especially for broadcasting and are considered the Cadillac of the electronics industry and are valued at some $1,500 apiece. But bettering the equipment here at the broadcast studios was only half the story. From there, we had to improve the sound of our signal as it is received by your radio in your home or car. Again, this was costly, but certainly worth the money and the effort. We replaced tubes, replaced parts, cleaned contacts, hired special engineers to completely go over the equipment, and make changes and improvements wherever necessary. But that isn't the only story. Now, it's a matter of constant maintenance, constantly keeping supplies of parts and tubes on hand so that when trouble arises, it can be corrected simply and quickly. Now let me deal very briefly with the subject of sales. Naturally, a commercial radio station such as ours cannot survive without program and advertising revenue. That's our bread and butter. The all-new WGHN was quickly accepted by local area merchants and businessmen. We have a policy of clean-cut commercials, no shabby, shady, unhealthy advertising. No screaming announcements, no high-pressure, quick-deal advertising, and we abide by a strict code of ethics as set forth in the National Association of Broadcasters' Code of Good Practices, to which we subscribe. On behalf of the corporation and the staff, I extend a sincere vote of thanks to area businesses, to all of those who include radio in their advertising budget, who have helped us keep a clean, high-caliber type of program because of their constant support. I wish to them, as well as to you, the listener, who patronizes our sponsors, the very best for the new year. Now, here's our general manager, Doug Chopkis.
Thank you, George. As you probably know, my main functions at WGHN are general management and control of programming. In addition, I've had complete charge of the WGHN News Department with the assistance of some competent correspondents in the community and surrounding areas. Since the majority of my experience in radio has been in the field of journalism, we did not immediately hire a news director. Instead, the corporation felt it would be best to first establish our news policies, set up our news contacts, and make sure the coverage was as we wished. Never in my radio experience have I experienced the reaction, the deep appreciation expressed by listeners to our news coverage and to good news coverage in general. And this is not to my credit, but to the credit of the corporation. We have established policies that are fair to everyone. We do not discriminate. We are willing to broadcast, as an example, the side of the union as well as the side of management, the side of the township as well as the city, the side of the Democrat as well as the Republican. We are willing to delve into controversial issues. We insist on a strict policy of no opinions expressed in newscasts. We insist on local coverage that includes as much as we can possibly handle, not just the police blotter, the sensational, the fires, the accidents. The mark of a good news department is the one that does its job of daily coverage, from the small to the large, keeping the community informed on all subjects. Sometimes we wonder why we do not win awards, why our news department is not recognized. Well, I learned long ago that many news departments which win the big awards for one thing or another many times are the ones which do not keep up their daily complete coverage as they should. They do not reach into depth, do not explain the issues to the small man, the average person. And this is our goal. Now, moments ago, I mentioned opinions in the news. In accordance with periodic prodding by the Federal Communications Commission, WGHN has adopted a policy of editorializing. Not wild, unexplained, unfounded, unresearched opinions, but sensible and explained stands and positions on various issues. We abide by strict regulations again and offer equal time to any qualified person or group opposed to our stand. As I have often explained, our main purpose in editorializing, even on thorny, controversial issues, is not to convert you to our point of view, but to make you, the listener, think about the issue, to form your own opinion, but only after hearing the arguments, looking into the matter yourself, and drawing your own conclusions. Well, so much for news. Our general programming policies have been quite evident since our takeover. We do not rock and roll. We try to program for the community in all aspects. We do not scream or shout. We do not fill your day with jingles, singing station breaks, weather forecasts in rhythm, and news flashes with background jivey music. Our policy, granted, is quite conservative. But we want to be a companion for as many as possible, for as long as possible each day. We do not want to wear out our welcome. We try to be versatile, informative, entertaining. Judging by your reaction, I feel we have been well accepted in our general policies. On behalf of the Board of Directors and the staff of the radio station, I cannot thank you, the listener, enough. You have made it all possible. Without you, we cannot exist. We love to hear your compliments, and we still do each day, believe it or not. But we like criticism. And I mean that. We want to please you and can't know when we are not unless we hear from you. We thank you again for your acceptance in 1964. We alone cannot accept credit for our business success. We realize that a supreme being has had a hand in this business. That's the way we operate and plan to continue. Our praise and our credit goes first to God, and we are thankful to the Lord for his blessings on WGHN. We pray and ask you to pray for his continued watch over us, his continued guidance in our overall project of broadcasting. We look to him first, to you secondly, for continued success in 1965. From all of us to all of you, may I wish a most happy and blessed new year.
Your friends at the Michigan Gas Utilities Company, 310 South Water Street, hope that you've enjoyed this brief flashback over the past year. The local gas company personnel wish the best for you and yours in the new year, and that all your news in 65 will be good news. Portions of this program were pre-recorded. This has been a production of WGHN News. You're in tune with 1370 WGHN in Grand Haven, Michigan.